I thought we would discuss the major and unprecedented events in Israel and talk about it from various aspects as I'm thinking that there are at least three avenues we can profitably pursue. One is we'll allow the friends to give their updates on what they've read or seen. Then we can consider some scriptural aspects to this situation, and then we could discuss or answer any questions or comments about what we can do as Christians in this, how would we explain or represent this to any that we might be in contact with, and what as a group has been happening so far. I trust you all saw in that email that the e-blast that Brother Adi put together on Israel and the land that went out, I sent that yesterday, so I hope you had a chance to read that. Brother Adi explained that that was an excerpt from a 2001 article that you can find on Bible Today under the headings of articles. In reading it, it probably looked like it was written out of New Brunswick at the time, 2001. But Brother Adi put in a headliner that brought it right up to date. We're so glad that he had the presence of mind to do that. And then I sent out this morning an email with three responses to that e-blast that I thought you would like to see a sampling. So I shared that with you all as well. With that, that was my perspective on how we might go about discussing this morning. Was there another aspect to this that someone wanted to make mention of at this point? Otherwise, we'll just start with just kind of letting you all tell us about current events in Israel. So we'll do that. So instead of just listening to me, I do have my updates. I'm sure you do have yours, but let me just... Anyone who would like to share what they have seen and a recap, we're happy to have you do that. Barati.
So I'm just reading online here that rockets were fired from Lebanon at Israel's... hold on a second. This is April 6th. I'm sorry. But Lebanon apparently has a number of rockets that they're ready to fire at Israel.
That would be Hezbollah.
Hezbollah, yeah.
And they did fire some artillery and rockets from southern Lebanon in support of the Hamas invasion, and Israel has returned fire. But it hasn't gone beyond that at this moment. But both Hezbollah in Iran... Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Gaza Strip are both supported and armed by Iran. They're the similar brand of Islamic thinking. Brother Dan.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that Hezbollah has fired rockets and Israel's fired back, and just to open up. And thankfully we had an early morning phone call with you, and we woke up later and found out that this great event was happening in the world. And so Israel was woken up, if you will, early in their morning, and they were attacked on three fronts, land, air, and sea. And as far as I understand it, the rockets that were coming from Gaza into Israel, I think now up to like 3,500 rockets have been shot from the time it began yesterday morning for them. And they broke through the wall as well, and went in and terrorized and killed and captured, many hostages and have them in strategic places where they have their, ammunition and so on and so forth. So from the early morning on, it's, and they took over. I've read like 22 different, locations or towns in Israel. And so the fight is to gain possession of all of those places in Israel and get the hostages, as many as they can, back out of captivity alive. And then Israel, of course, declared war, and then they will take, and they already have started, I guess. I haven't read too many updates on that, but we'll just stop there. Over.
Okay, very good. No, that's good. Thank you. So I too will rattle off some things, and then we'll gladly have brethren fill in things that we're missing or ask questions on current events. So just as Brother Dan said, as you all know, yesterday, early in the morning in Israel, the Hamas militant group, Hamas is an acronym for the Arabic phrase meaning Islamic Resistance Movement. That's what Hamas stands for. Arabic phrase meaning Islamic Resistance Movement. They are in league with the Islamic Jihad movement as well. So Gaza has a 25-mile border with Israel, 25 miles long. You and I don't think of that as all that big. The current plan to build a wall in the southwest U.S. with Mexico to try to limit the immigrants coming in is a 20-mile wall that is just currently being discussed. I'm trying to just say this to give you a sense of proportion. So in that 25-mile Gaza Strip wall, they, to the great consternation and shock to Israel, their intelligence community, this invasion took place successfully. Not that it's going to be successful in the long run, but it succeeded in multiple ways so far. But just last week, the Israeli intelligence community issued a report stating that they had concluded that Hamas would not risk an all-out confrontation with Israel. And they were dead wrong, obviously. This has raised alarms in the U.S. and other parts of the world regarding the ability of the Israeli intelligence service to accurately monitor and determine what is actually going on right within its own borders. And some of the CIA response has been, it demonstrates that there was too great of a reliability on electronic means of high-tech monitoring without enough human resources in these groups to be able to more accurately monitor the movements. The element of surprise and tactical and strategic ability of Hamas to make these inroads shows that this was a long-term planned operation with assistance by Iran, which then, again, is one of these elements that shows a breadth of the enemies of Israel. And by the strategic blunder on the Israeli intelligence community, and by the way, the United States intelligence community had no idea this was happening. It sends a message out to others of Israel's neighbors, showing a weakness on Israel's part that some of its enemies might choose to take advantage of at some future point, if not currently. So that's part of a bigger problem that Israel faces, more than even its immediate problem. However, that being said, at 8:30 a.m., that's the last time I checked the news sources, over 600 Israelis were dead, over 2,000 wounded, and possibly as many as 100 have been kidnapped, as was brought out. Over 300 Palestinians have died, and they are still having gun battles in at least 8 locations inside Israel, with one of them being in a city you probably know the name of, Ashkelon, where the Israeli troops are still doing battle with Hamas. And it's also reported that Hamas militants inside Israel have been rearmed or resupplied, which demonstrates a very active and ongoing military activity there. If they can resupply their fighters, it demonstrates Israel has not contained the problem. They've retaliated, as you know. Israel's retaliated with airstrikes. You are probably also aware that Israel sends a warning to where they're going to have their jets strike to warn the inhabitants to flee that area. Interestingly, it goes out over the loudspeakers of the mosques in those areas. They don't have long. The people have to leave immediately because Israeli jets are trying to target the Hamas strongholds, if you will. As Brother Dan brought out, one of the problems with having Israelis taken prisoner, both young and old civilians as well as soldiers, is that they do locate these captives near where Hamas does not want Israel to bomb, so to try to deter them. So it is a double problem for Israel on that front. The aspect of the broader picture was that some of the background, they say, is that the United States was working with Saudi Arabia to try to broker a closer relationship between Saudi Arabia and Israel, in part because Saudi Arabia does not care for Iran, and Iran getting nuclear power weapons. And they are different kinds of Muslims, Shiite and Sunni differences. So Saudi Arabia was looking to Israel, even as Egypt and Jordan have agreements with Israel. So as this was developing, a closer relationship between Israel and Saudi Arabia, this might be one of the reasons that caused Hamas to initiate this war to break up further steps on the part of Saudi Arabia toward peace with Israel. And one of the things that we read this morning out of Saudi Arabia was that the Saudi-based Organization of Islamic Cooperation that has 57 members to it, they condemned Israel. They condemned Israel military aggressions that led to the fall of hundreds of martyrs. They're talking about the Hamas fighters, martyrs and wounded among the Palestinian people. So the public statement by the Saudis and this 57-member group is they're viewing Hamas terrorists as martyrs. Now, that is a problem. because the indoctrinated Hamas militants believe that their death is justified and will gain them a great reward in heaven. So they don't mind dying for the cause. That's an additional problem. An official from Egypt has flown to Russia to discuss this current issue, even though Egypt has peaceable ties with Israel currently. Egyptian flying to Russia is they're trying to promote restarting a group called the Middle East Quartet. The Middle East Quartet. The Middle East Quartet was formed in 2002. It consists of four parties: United States, Russia, the United Nations, and the European Union. And their goal was try to bring about peace in the Middle East, particularly between the Palestinian people and Israel. But as we know, most of the world views that there should be a two-state situation, a Palestinian state in Gaza and the West Bank area. If you see the map Brother Chris has highlighted, you see the Gaza Strip and the south, not the very south, but to the west on the Mediterranean Sea coast, you'll see the Gaza Strip. As we mentioned, that's a 25-mile border. And then you'll see the larger purplish area. That's what's called the West Bank. And that's Palestinian. That's controlled not by Hamas. That's controlled by the Palestinian Authority, the PA. They're related to one another, but they are different. This Mideast Quartet, most of the members are calling for that West Bank area, the Gaza Strip, to be a Palestinian state with the capital in East Jerusalem. So as far as Israel is concerned, that's a no-go. But that's part of what that's of interest, part of what continues to go on. So I think in this end, I think as far as, we need to discuss for a moment that this is 50 years from the Yom Kippur War in 1973. The day yesterday, Saturday, that there's a name, and I'm going to let one of you tell me about it because I didn't look it up. But the name was, I wrote it down.
Brother Rick, I wrote it down.
Oh, Sims Chat Torah? Is that what you wrote? And what is that, Brother Dan?
I don't know. I've just told Connie to look it up on the phone. But
okay. So we'll wait for Sister Connie. She'll bring it up.
Simchat Torah, or Simchat Torah, is a Jewish holiday that celebrates and marks the conclusion of the annual cycle of public Torah readings and the beginning. And the beginning of a new cycle. Simchat Torah is a component of the biblical Jewish holiday of Shemi Atzeret, eighth day of assembly, which follows immediately after the festival of Sukkot in the month of Tishrei, occurring in September or October on the Gregorian calendar. Well, that is what that is.
Very good. So, let's see here. I don't know if we could find it in several places, but, well, let me just ask, anyone else on that holiday, this holiday? Nope. Sister Carrie.
I can't recall where I read it, but I thought I read somewhere it was the tail end of the harvest festival.
Okay. It
celebrates the harvest.
Okay, very good.
Don't quote me on that.
I think you're doing quite well on that. So,
what I'm reading here is, the holiday of, I did miss it so quickly. Sorry. This holiday is characteristic. No, that's not what I'm going to read. But I could read that the name is derived from the fact that on this day, they celebrate the completion of the annual reading of Torah.
All right, so good. So let's look at Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, and Ruth, are you there? I can't see you. Okay, could you read there Leviticus 23, verse 24, let's start there.
Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial, a blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And
so,
the Lord.
So what? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, also on the tenth day of this seventh month there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be an holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord.
So what month is this, Ruth?
The seventh month. I think it's Tishri.
Okay. So that's the time we're in, right? Time
yes.
of year. Okay. And then on the
10th
day, there was the Day of Atonement. So we've got that. Now drop down, Ruth, and read same chapter for us. Pick up in verse 34 and through 36.
Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord. On the first day shall be an holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein. 7 days ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. On the eighth day shall be an holy convocation unto you, and ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. It is a solemn assembly, and ye shall do no servile work therein.
Okay, thank you. So let me double check, is this the same feast that we're talking about as just concluding yesterday, the eighth day of that? Anyone have confidence to say yes?
Yes.
So what does Sukkoth mean?
Feast of Tabernacles.
So Sukkoth means tabernacles?
Yep.
There you go. Thank you. All right, brother. So this is what is being remembered as what happened yesterday, and undoubtedly Hamas, under Iranian influence, targeted this event to take place at that time. And a very remarkable experience indeed in how it all worked out. So I had mentioned about the concern that Hamas was trying to perhaps slow down or break up a Saudi Arabia greater peace arrangement with Israel by starting this war, and the Saudi Arabian people would be sympathetic to the Palestinian cause or the greater Arab cause. So there's that aspect. But also, very recently, some ultra-Orthodox Jews went in to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's the mosque that's on the the Temple Mount Hill. It's across, as it were, the pavement from the Dome of the Rock. And these ultra, Orthodox Jews went up to pray. And to the, Arabs, they consider that a desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And, they've actually, it's initiated wars in the past between Hamas and Israel, over this supposed desecration. So that happened recently. That also might have been part of what, it triggered. Another aspect is that the Israeli government, as you know, has been in turmoil because the leader, Prime Minister Netanyahu wants to restrict the capability of their Supreme Court in Israel to judge against various laws that the government would pass. And currently the government under Netanyahu is a coalition government that he's cobbled together, contains a number of ultra-Orthodox members. So they would pass what would be considered laws in their favor. But regardless of the right or wrong of that, it would have to depend on what laws and so forth. Many in Israel have protested. I'm sure you've been reading about that. The protests have been going on for months. But part of the protest was some of the reservists, the Israeli reservists, said they wouldn't respond if they were called up. This is their form of protesting. Now, this was in the past, recent past. So while that's a simmering issue, it might have also led Hamas or the Iranian bosses to encourage them to try to take advantage of this unsettled situation in Israel as well. But undoubtedly, this will unite the Israelis in the immediate future for sure. So there were these number of things that might have contributed to the timing of this brazen attack. So that is what all I have at this time on any of that. Is there anything anyone would like to add? Ruth or Marilyn?
Well, I don't know how it ties in exactly, but the United States just sent billions of dollars of wasn't it weaponry? And they could very well be using that very weaponry to attack Israel.
I'm not quite sure what you're saying. The United States, are you saying you think the United States sends weapons to the Hamas group?
Didn't they just send to Iran?
No. No, yeah, I think you're just mixing up a little something here. The United States had frozen $6 billion of Iranian funds.
Oh.
Years ago.
Oh.
To try to keep the Iranians from enriching and developing their nuclear capabilities at armament. And that debate's been going on for a number of years. So, the United States had frozen $6 billion of Iranian money. Now, President Biden just released that in exchange for a handful of United States citizens to be released.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all that is.
I misunderstood it all. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes. But that was good to have that brought out because that is a very recent current event as well. Iran got their $6 billion so they might not feel restrained to try to get their money back on that. Okay. No, thank you. Sister Cindy.
Two things. One, can you give a list of where you're getting your information? Because I've been having a very difficult time. It just like Google and CNN, and it just, I'm not getting like the full picture. I'm just getting, oh, there's rockets flying, and that's about it. But one of the things that I did get, I just saw the headline, and I didn't read it, so I can't really comment on it, but it just said that something to the effect that Putin is looking very closely at Lebanon during this particular time. It has something to do with his war against the Ukraine, and Poland is up in the air right now, and I don't know, it sounds like it all ties in, but I can't tell you how. So, but anyway, that's all I got. Over.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly a very, fluid situation indeed. Okay, Brother Adi's put a few things in the chat, and so is Brother Godwin. Thank you. I guess we'll also say, Brother Adi, I see you got your hand raised too. Good.
Yeah, so the United States did free up $6 billion from Korean banks that were, Iran's money. And they said that they would watch carefully and supervise that those funds go into humanitarian aid. But what that does, which is a little bit deceiving, is even what the Iranians will do is they'll reappropriate other funds that went to humanitarian aid to go to military usage, and they'll make sure that these funds go to humanitarian aid. So it's just a matter of moving money around. Over.
Okay, indeed. Yeah, that's for sure. Okay. Very good. Brother Norm.
Just to get a little bit of the idea of the size of, you said Gaza's 25 miles. They say that's 16 square miles. That's not very much, but there's 3 million Arabs in that area. So that's a huge crowd in a small spot. And the death toll is climbing faster than we can even talk about it. They're saying 600 Palestinians killed as of now and 2,000 wounded. So it's just climbing really fast. It's the whole thing's very sad. It's just war, and that's the bottom line. Just a lot of death and destruction needlessly. Over.
So true. So true. Sister Marilyn.
Well, I think Brother David Vickery had his hand up way before. I don't know if.
Yeah, it's really tough when brethren just raise their hand without doing the electronic hand. I do miss them. I'm sorry for that.
I was just going to say, and all of this, although it's sad, it's all in the Lord's hands because he told them this was their land. And what they didn't take, and that was the big problem back in Joshua's time. They didn't take everything. He suffered. They suffered with the hornets that were going to come in and keep agitating them. And that's the problem now. Israel did not listen, so they have to be punished because that land is precious to the Lord. The land is equated to the people. And they should be getting, in my understanding, they should be getting all the way up from Egypt all the way up to the Euphrates. And that takes a great deal of area, some of which they never even desire now to have. But I know that in David and Saul's period, they had areas that were already up to Damascus and so forth. They had troops up there. So to me, although it's a sad thing, it's because they have to be punished because they have not had the faith to retain what they once had. And what I mean by they once had is that they once had the land and then they gave it up for this two-part or a three-part area, and now they just have to fight to get it back. And that's what we're looking forward to, is when they get it back, it's all theirs, under the control of the Lord, and then the kingdom can proceed from there. Over.
All right. Thank you. Brother Chris.
I don't have anything to contribute as far as news or anything, but as far as our prophetic expectations, I'm admittedly ignorant on like who's who in the zoo when it comes to the Hamas and the PLO and who they all represent. But we, if our expectations are online, we do expect Psalm 83 to precede a lot of major events in the world regarding Israel, like the Jacob's trouble and such. They have to be in unwalled villages at some point for us, if the fulfillment of how we understand those scriptures. But if this is the catalyst that will begin this final episode, as it were, of the gospel age, Psalm 83 being fulfilled, are the players you're saying, like Arabs, Saudi Arabia, our neighbors to Israel, but I don't know if we would say they've, in terms, thrown in the towel. We know Iran is an enemy. So the PLO and the Hamas and these other factions, if Israel does take them down, as Sister Mary Lee just suggested, would this actually represent all of the team players that we would consider their neighbors that have to go down as far as the Arab troublemakers, as it were, that would give them a sense of, you know, we finally established some security? Over. It's a question, even though it's a long one. Over.
Okay, thank you. I'm busy trying to juggle a few screens here. It sounds like we're transitioning from the news into current events, which is fine. I think we've covered the news pretty well. So let me get back to where I am. Brother Dan, I think you're the last one having your hand up.
Yes, Brother Rick, I was just going to say, in connection with Sister Mary Lee's comment in some of the reading I did yesterday, if I understand it correctly, in 2005, the Nation of Israel gave up the Gaza Strip to the Arabs for peace, and by 2007, the Hamas element was ruling that land. So we can look at what took place in recent history, and then what 15, 18 years later we have this current war. So they gave up the land that the Lord has given to them, and we'll just leave it there. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Brother David Vickery, please.
Oh, thank you, Brother Rick. I'll try and remember the electronic hand from now on. I was just thinking possibly if that would be also Ezekiel 39. 26-39, where it talks about God would punish Israel, but he reassured them that he would nonetheless save them, and that they would have their land, and that they would be blessed.
Okay, good. Thank you. So, brethren, it's not an easy way to do this, of course, but at the recent Labor Day West Suburban Convention, we gave our discourse called Israel Future Events. And what we did in that 1 hour was to cover numerous sets of scriptures which the brethren talk about in many different forums, panels, symposiums, discourses. And so we tried to put all that information in a 1 hour time period. It's called Israel Future Events. You can find it on harvesttruths.com, our website, under New Discourses. And it came with four handouts. We covered Psalm 83, Zechariah 12, Ezekiel 20, Ezekiel 38, Micah 5, and we offered interpretations there. And again, it's prophetic, and it is somewhat symbolic, but we believe what the suggestions, where Brother Russell did comment, particularly on Ezekiel 38, they're in harmony with his expectations with a few things of understanding. I'd like to put a couple of screen shares up. I'm probably disconcerting to you when I was doing that a moment ago. But let me just see. Ruth, can you unmute, please? Tell me if you see something here in a moment. I have to see if I can bring it up. Let's see. You don't want that. Do you happen to see a screen share, Ruth, or no?
No.
Okay. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that then. Let's see. Oh, well. Okay. Now, do you see it? Marilee, do you see a screen share on that screen?
No.
No one. Okay. Yeah, let's try again. Let me try again. Well, maybe I'd have to do. Let me do that. Now let me try screen share again. Let's see.
No.
Okay, thank you. Lost my controls. There we go. Let's see on that. There we go. Okay, I think we got it now. Very good.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So, tell me if, wait a minute. So you should be looking at Psalm 83. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. So, let's turn to Psalm 83. You have to bear with me on this, please, for time's sake. In Psalm 83, verse 1, keep not thou silent, O God, hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God, for lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted against your treasured ones. That's Rotherham. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent and they are confederated against you. The tabernacles, and then it goes through this list of names. But after the names, I'm dropped down to verse 13. Oh my God, make them like a wheel, as the stubble before the wind, as the fire burneth the wood, and as the flame setteth the mountains on fire, so persecute them with thy tempest, and make them afraid with thy storm. Fill their faces with shame, that they may seek thy name, O Lord. Let them be confounded and troubled forever. Yea, let them be put to shame and perish, that men may know that thou, whose name alone is Jehovah, art the Most High over all the earth. So the brethren have observed over the years this confederation of Arab nations against Israel, but we notice that it's really against God, Jehovah, and against his people, which is Israel. So this is a contest between their false god of Islam, Allah, and the true God of the Jews and the Christians of Jehovah. So here, the brethren have often thought that this either was a conflict that's been in progress since Israel's become a nation, which is a way of thinking, or that this is a future war, which happens to be our thinking. This is a future war in which these nations are going to come against Israel, and then Israel will defeat them. And we call them the near Arab neighbors to Israel. So these are countries that are nearby. So here on the screenshot, Edom, Moab, and Ammon would represent Jordan. The Hagarenes would represent Iraq, Gebal, Lebanon. Amalek would represent the Negev, or south of Judah, which would fit in with Hamas. The Philistines are the Palestinians in Gaza, or Hamas. Tyre would be southern Lebanon, which would represent Hezbollah. And the children of Lot, which were Ammon and Moab. Ammon is the capital, and Moab is around Petra. Ammon is the capital, Ammon is the capital of Jordan, and Moab is around the Petra, the redstone city. Asher in the King James, or in the better in the Hebrew, it's Assyria, could represent Iraq, or it might symbolically represent Russia. And the reason is it might possibly represent Russia is because in verse 8, Psalm 83:8, Assyria also is joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. So this is a helper. It doesn't necessarily have to be one of the Arab countries, even though it could be Assyria, Iraq. But Assyria often in scripture represents Russia. And Russia has helped the Arab nations over the in the past with armaments and such. So that's a possibility. So the conclusion is that all these are near neighbor countries to Israel, and they're all Arab Muslims. And it is interesting that Egypt is not included in this list. That is a point of interest. But the brethren, we like to emphasize that this war takes place before the invasion of Magog's host in Ezekiel 38. Because we'll read there in a moment, but Israel is dwelling safely when Magog's host invade. And when we read about the invaders of Magog's host, none of these countries are mentioned. None of the near Arab neighbors to Israel are mentioned in Ezekiel 38. So it implies that this Psalm 83 war would take place first and help create the environment we read of in Ezekiel 38. The war in Psalm 83 takes place before the war in Ezekiel 38. Let me ask, is there anyone who want to make any comments here on Psalm 83? Okay, let's then look at that Ezekiel 38. And let me close this. Let me stop that share. Let me go to another. And that's going to be Ezekiel 8, 38.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Thank you. And can you see the whole thing or not quite?
Just the top.
Okay. I need to see if I can't get this. Well, it's not going to let me do that.
Well, Rick, at the very bottom on the right-hand side, there's an option to zoom out.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Are you seeing it all now?
Yeah. Until the fourth paragraph.
Do you see the last line experienced a certain amount of brain drain?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all we got. Okay. So in Ezekiel 38, if you're there, in verse 1, and the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and I will turn you back and put your hooks into your jaws, and will bring you forth all thine army, horses, horsemen, all them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company, with bucklers, shields, and swords, all of them, handling swords, Persia, which is Iran, Ethiopia, and Libya, with them, all of them with shields and helmet, Gomer and his bands, the house of Togomar of the north quarters, and all his bands and many people with thee. And you drop down to verse 11. And thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls and having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil, take a prey. And it goes on. We believe that this expression of Israel dwelling in safety, as with unwalled villages, means that they must have a sense of security. And the suggestion is that sense of security is because of the previous Psalm 83 war, which defeated their near Arab neighbors. Go ahead.
Can I adjust it? Because we can only see that much of it.
All right. Very good. I hope that helps the rest of you as well. Brother Adi.
So I like verse 8. It says, after many days you will be called to arms. In future years you will invade a land that has recovered from war, whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They had brought them out of the nations, and now all of them live in safety. Over.
Okay, good. Thank you. Very good. So just not doing this justice, but in point A, and of course we have at the top, consider the fourth volume, page 556 for details. But in point A, we have the invaders. I make note, all are not near neighbors, but all are Muslims. And that's an important point. It's useful to refer to Genesis, the 10th chapter, the table of nations, from the three sons of Noah. And again, you could consider Brother Russell's suggestions there. The word Gog is a title, or as in the leader, and it may represent Satan working through worldly people of these following countries. Magog, a descendant of Japheth, those that settled in Europe and Russia. Meshach and Tubal, they are descendants of Japheth. They settled in Eastern Europe, Russia, and Central Asia. Persia is Iran. Ethiopia, or known as Cush, that's a descendant of Ham. And they settled North Africa and East Africa. Libya, also known as Put, they are descendants of Ham. And they settled Northwest Africa. Gomer, a descendant of Japheth, settled in North Turkey, perhaps Eastern Europe, even as far as Armenia and Georgia. The house of Togomar, they are descendants of Japheth. And we note in our Ezekiel 38, verse 6, these are of the north quarters. They settled in what is today Turkestan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Azerbaijan, and Uzbekistan, and Trizika, Kyrgyzstan. I'm not sure about that at all. These countries were all formerly part of the USSR, United Soviet Union. However, they, when that broke up, they became their own countries. They're on the southern side of Russia, north of Israel, and they're all Muslim. That all these countries that we've read so far, they're Muslim, but they're not Arabs. Okay. But now we notice that they come from all four directions, yet mostly are from the north. And there is, now we want to look at verse 13. Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof shall say unto thee, that is unto the invaders, are you come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, cattle, goods, and great spoil? And it goes on. So here is a second group that are on the scene. And the suggestion is that because these aren't direct invaders, but they certainly aren't helping Israel either, we call them the sideline people. Perhaps Sheba and Dedan represent Eastern Arabian Peninsula countries. Sheba is descendant of Ham, maybe of Saudi Arabia. Dedan is descendant of Ham, maybe Yemen. The merchants of Tarshish. Now, those are descendants of Japheth. So it suggests that this might be represent Great Britain and Western Europe, like France and Germany and other countries, and the young lions are represented as coming from Great Britain, which would be the Western European colonies, which might represent the United States and Canada possibilities. So I'm just reading in conclusion here, God's intention is to glorify himself in the utter destruction as nations and as Muslims. It's God's intention to humble and chastise Israel for adhering to her lovers, that is the Western powers influencing the country's leadership. Compromises when it was the Lord who actually created their condition of living in unwalled villages, that is safety. It's really the Lord who's giving Israel any victory. The possible spoils mentioned could be oil, natural gas, food, technology, and the possible prey, which some kind suggests something a living, verse 12, might be the people of great intellectual abilities. Russia and other countries have experienced a certain amount of brain drain by Jews leaving those countries. So these are possibilities and something just to consider. But the intention is that the Lord has a chastisement upon Israel, and Brother Ken Rawson used to emphasize how this might develop, which to me has made the most sense over the years. We actually find it in Ezekiel 39. So we'd like to look at Ezekiel 39 and in verse 25. Well, actually, I'm going to start in 23, Ezekiel 39:23. And the heathen shall know that the house of Israel went into captivity for their iniquity because they trespassed against me. Therefore hid I my face from them and gave them into the hand of their enemies. So fell they all by the sword. According to their uncleanness and according to their transgressions have I done unto them and hid my face from them. Those verses are referring to the 1845 years of God's disfavor from 33 AD when Jesus pronounced their Jewish house was left unto them desolate because they rejected him and God's ways, and they were their hypocrisy until 1878, when their God would once again restore his favor to the house of Israel in accordance with his promise made to Abraham that he would bless his seed. So verse 23 and 24 is referring to the previous chastisement of the Lord for the Israel's rejection of Messiah and hypocrisy at the first advent. But then picking up in verse 25, therefore thus saith the Lord God, now will I bring again the captivity of Jacob and have mercy upon the whole house of Israel and will be jealous for my name's sake. After that they have borne their shame and all their trespasses whereby they have trespassed against me when they dwelt safely in their land and none made them afraid. When I have brought them again from the people and gathered them out of their enemies' lands and am sanctified in them in the sight of many nations, then shall they know that I am the Lord their God, which caused them to be led into captivity among the heathen, but I will have gathered them into their own land and have left none of them any more there. Neither will I hide my face any more from them, for I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord. So in here we read that the Lord is saying that they have a shame and a trespass against him. Verse 26, when they dwelt safely in their land and none made them afraid, which is just about the exact word expressions that we read in Ezekiel 38 and verse 11. So there's a trespass. After this great war of Psalm 83, the near Arab neighbors are vanquished, Israel's dwelling safely. Instead of recognizing the Lord, they listen to the Western powers and they compromise in some way without giving the Lord God the glory and honor. So this Magog's host invasion, which the Lord causes as their last trouble, is to humble them and prepare them for the future blessings of the peaceable kingdom. In this, a holy remnant of Jews of faith will be made manifest, and the ancient worthies resurrected at that time will meet them and explain the situation of that Jesus indeed was their Messiah, and they will accept that. Now we want to look at Jeremiah, the 30th chapter. Jeremiah 30. Jeremiah 30 in verse 11. For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. I will make a full end of all nations whither I have scattered thee, yet I will not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. For thus saith the Lord, thy bruise is incurable and thy wound is grievous. There is none to plead thy cause, that thou mayest be bound up. Thou hast no healing medicines. All your lovers have forsaken thee. They seek thee not, for I have wounded you with the wound of an enemy and the chastisement of a cruel one for the multitude of thine iniquity, because thy sins were increased. I have done these things unto thee. Therefore, all they that devour thee shall be devoured. All thy adversaries, every one of them, shall go into captivity, and they that spoil thee shall be a spoil, and all that prey upon thee will I give for a prey, for I will restore health unto you, and I will heal you of thy wounds, saith the Lord, because they called thee an outcast, saying, this is Zion, whom no man seeketh after. So the thought is that the Lord is saying that their sins were increased, and we're linking that to that Ezekiel 39, that they sinned against the Lord when they were dwelling safely. And so the Lord brings a final punishment, Magog's invasion, to humble them as a chastisement in order that afterwards he destroys those enemies that came against them and will bless Israel. And all her lovers will have forsaken her. In other words, all those that were offering support to Israel currently will end up abandoning her in the end. And it will be made manifest that only the Lord is for Israel because of his promise to the forefathers. Change screen shares here. Let's look at this. Sister Cindy?
I have a question that I'll just throw out, and then when it's, because it's on a kind of a different subject, but it's related to this. Our last president changed the he recognized Israel by moving the embassy to Jerusalem, and now he's quite possibly going to be another the Republican candidate again. And I'm just wondering, like Biden, the Democrats are not really big fans of Israel, but Trump apparently is. So could you maybe comment on that, how that's going to play in or what your thoughts are or whatever? So that was my question.
Trump's a big fan of the evangelical Christians who vote for him, and they, the evangelical Christians, are big fans of Israel because they want Israel to rebuild the temple so that the man of sin might come and move the prophetic chains further forward to get Jesus to return. And 144,000 Jews will be saved, and all the rest will be slaughtered and then doomed to hell for all eternity because they didn't accept Jesus. That's the evangelical Christian prophetic viewpoint. And Trump likes their voting bloc, and they like him. So that's his interest in Israel. I mean, we all know he's an adulterer and all of these other abominable things. So it's not like we want to look at him as a great endorser for Israel. We want to look at what he's really doing. He's really trying to go for the American vote because Israelis don't vote for American presidents. So that's my personal take, and I know all of you might have your own. We are running out of time. We're running low here. Maybe that can be discussed further at some point. I put this map up. I trust you're seeing it. This does try to connect the dots a little bit. You could see the near Arab neighbors would be like Jordan and Lebanon and Syria and Iraq. And this is a suggestion of the Psalm 83, Arab Muslims. But then the Ezekiel 38, they are Muslims but not Arab. And Libya's mentioned, and Iran is mentioned. And the other suggestions that we made with the surrounding countries are all there. But it does come from the four corners, even though mostly from the north. It is a miracle that Israel survives at all. So I'll close that share. Okay. So we don't have time to really pursue further Micah 5 and 7 and Zechariah 12 and Ezekiel 20. We do discuss them in that discourse. If Israel, entitled Israel Future Events, if that's of interest to you, it's something you can pursue there at your leisure. It's a lot easier to follow than what I just did. We can't say with any kind of surety that what we're seeing now is going to be the Psalm 83 war. It may be. And at some point it will be. But Israel's had numerous wars since their statehood, and with varying degrees of success, even though they've won their wars in a sense, some are stalemates. And as pointed out, sometimes they gave up land, like the Sinai Peninsula and such. Other times they retain the land, like the Golan Heights. So it's still fluid. Because we're pro-Israel doesn't mean we're pro everything the governments do. So there's that. So wanted to point out that this booklet, Embrace Your Jewish Heritage, is for Jews. Brother Ken Rawson wrote it. It's to encourage Jews to try to follow their faith according to the Torah, Bible, and not be worldly Jews. Israel, A Nation of Miracles, is available too, and that is more for a Christian message. Will Israel survive the end times? Which we have an ad running, which will be discussed during the business meeting. That is more recent, and that is mostly a message to Christians, even though if you were Jewish and read it, you wouldn't be particularly offended. Israel, A Nation of Miracles, this is a tract. We still have some of these. The Time to Favor Zion was a booklet for Jews. However, that has a very limited print. We have a few in stock. It's the brethren don't request it much, so it hasn't been reprinted recently. The Israeli Arab Peace Process and Bible Prophecy. Again, a Christian message on Israel. We do have quite a few of those. That does go at the book table at the fair. And this is an interesting tract. Israel, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. It comes from Portland area Bible students. It's quite excellent as a tract. We have some of these. And it goes through the hopes for Israel and the modern, relatively modern condition. And if you want more on that, if I went too fast, we can happily provide that information again individually. If you want to email on Ruth or I, we can list that for you if any of that interests you as time goes on here. We'll see how long this war lasts. As brought out, we are not in favor of war, but we do understand from Bible prophecy wars must happen, and we do favor Israel. And yet it's good for us each to know how we would like to explain our personal understanding from the Bible on why we support Israel and how we support it. Sister Marilee.
I just wanted to say that those publications, for the most part, all except that Israel tract, but the tract from Portland and the other booklets are all up for free downloads on our website. Over.
Thank you. Very good. Sister Alice.
I just want to mention that we were on the mission trip with Brother Ken, and while they were the brethren were doing something in the north, Bob and Rebecca Gray and myself took a whole stack of Israel Appointment with Destiny DVDs and went into Gaza. And we went from door to door, and we went from town to town, and we went from store to store to library to businesses and passed them out. And that was 2 years before Gaza was given back to the Palestinians. So the Jews got that message, Israel Appointment with Destiny. Over.
Okay, very nice. That's very bold. Thank you.